First of all, I'm so excited to have you.
Okay.
And I imagine that this is going to be a really, really long interview. So I'll just go straight to the point because I'm sure people have questions. I don't know if you remember the first time we met. I don't think it was the first time, that was the second time. I remember this and I'll explain why it's important to your journey.
Okay.
So I had moved to Saskatoon in 2010.
Okay.
And the second time that we met, they were having a Nigerian Canadian Association of Saskatoon.
Okay.
And you were the one that did the food. You did a lot of the food. And everyone was always raving about your food. I just moved there. There was a particular name they used to call you. Some people used to call you. But everyone was raving about the food and everything. And I remember asking you and saying, are you going to have a catering service and something? And you were like, no, that's not what you wanted to do and whatnot. And now, fast forward to 11 years later, see everything that you've built. How were you so sure? Because at that point, that seemed like the only thing to do with food.
Mm.
You know, it seemed like you had to be doing catering from your basement. You had to, I'm not sure if you, your blog was even up then, but it wasn't. It was up and coming. But you were so sure. I remember because I was like, oh, why don't you just have like a kitchen? You got, and you were like, no, this is definitely not what you wanted to do. So, Ronke, first of all, how were you so sure? Because now that I look at everything that you have been able to build, I now appreciate how much of a visionary you were.
Oh, wow. This watch is legendary, man.
You better invite me to your house and give me food. So, so how were you so sure? Because every time I think back, I think about that statement. It's so profound in my mind. How were you so sure?
I think that there is this thing in the African community that if you can cook, then you can run a food business. And I think it's misguided in a lot of ways, right? Because I think when you do something like you're a Nigerian restaurant or you're a Nigerian caterer, it's not just your business. You're representing an entire community. You're representing an entire cuisine to like a new set of people that have never tried it before. So your game has to be strong. You cannot see if I cook jollof for you today. If you come to my house and you're like, okay, I like jollof, and I cook jollof for you, you have no expectation of the same level of jollofness the next time you come and ask me for jollof, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, you understand that today can be a little bit spicy, tomorrow it can not be. But if you're running a restaurant, you have to come and be consistent over and over and over again, because somebody that comes to you for jollof today, they expect the same type of jollof tomorrow. So I think that for me, of course, I think most of us that have food blogs, we always want, I want to have a restaurant. But I went and I worked back of the house. I worked front of the house. I understood how restaurants in this part of the world worked. And I realized that I might know how to cook, but there's so many layers and so many complexities to running a restaurant that I didn't see myself being in a place to be able to achieve what I would want to that level for 15 to 20 years down the line. Because it wasn't just about making money. It was about representing a cuisine and doing it consistently to a set of people who have actually never tried, who have never tried that kind of food before.
Wow. Okay, so I don't even think that I got to introduce you for those that might not know you, because I feel like you don't need introduction, but I have a couple of people that actually follow me that are not Nigerians, or, you know, some of them are Caucasian. So let me introduce you to Ronke Edoho. She's the founder of Niger Foodie. You're not the only one now, but I don't think many people know that. But she's the founder and the creative administrator of Niger Foodie. She also has a book called Losing Nigerian, right? And she's an accountant as well. She's a clinical weight loss specialist.
Mm-hmm.
So she went to school. She's not telling us to. She's not making us suffer for no reason. She has certification to show that you know, she knows what she's talking about. So now back to the Niger Foodie brand. As I said, by the time I met you, the blog had started, but it wasn't taking off. It wasn't as big as what it is eventually, and there were phases to it. See how I knew everything. There were phases to it, and I remember at that point in time, before I came to Saskatoon, I knew who you were, and that was because there were like a couple of food bloggers at that time. So you, Atim, of what was Atim's blog?
Afro Lems,
Lohi, and. But it was relatively still new. The whole blogging culture was just coming up. And I remember I came across your platform because you were doing, was it a giveaway of jollof rice or a jollof rice competition? This was how many years ago? And a friend of mine, both of us entered for the competition. So that was how I got to know about, you know, the blogging culture. So it was very new. Mm-hmm. Very, very new. And I think it's safe to say you're part of a pop culture in a sense in Nigeria, because the whole blogging thing started from, and I'm not just hyping you, the whole blogging thing started from you guys. And I think there was only one person that was really, really big at that time, and to Flo, I can't remember the name of her platform.
All Nigerian recipes.
But so when did the Nigerian Foodie brand actually start? And what was the journey like?
So the Nigerian Foodie, like I always tell people that if I read an article, like this is actually how I started blogging. I read an article on like one of the biggest food platforms in the world. And it was about African food. And I would never forget, they said, African food is often made with poorer qualities of beef and goat or something, or beef and fish or something like that. And something about the cuisine being poor. And I was so annoyed. Because I grew up on Nigerian food. Nigerian food is not poor. It is complex. It's flavorful. It can rival any other cuisine in the world. Fine. We're not like, we don't present like the prettiest meals or whatever it is, because that's not like, we have composite meals. It's not steak and potato and vegetables that you can make look pretty. It's everything. It's like soup. So it's like I felt offended by it. And then I'm the kind of person that if I see something that I do not like, if I can do something about it, I would choose to do something about it rather than complain about it. So for me, it was an opportunity. I'd always cooked. I loved cooking. I think I made my first pot of efo before I was 10. So it's something that, you know, was kind of like a part of me. When I was a child, I wanted to be a farmer. All my friends wanted to be doctors and nurses and lawyers. So food was always a part of like my life growing up. So it was like a right fit for me to kind of like educate the world on what my version of African food was, and that's not poor or made with low qualities or whatever it was. It's this thing that's supposed to be celebrated. So that was kind of what prompted me to start a food blog. And I started on Blogger at that time. Thank you, Gogo. because it was free. I didn't have to pay hosting or whatever it is. I could just go in and put my photo and write it about my food. So I started on Blogger. My first blog was actually called Little Miss Gastronom. And and that was where I kind of started like documenting my journey. And then I think Niger Foodie kind of morphed into Niger Foodie in 2009, I believe, just before I left university. So yeah, that's kind of the short story.
Okay, so did you ever see it like when you were starting, was it just a hobby, or did you see it morphing into, you know, all of this?
No, I would be insincere if I say that I saw like an opportunity to like have a business. No, it was just, for me, it was an opportunity for me to educate. And till today, I still see Niger Foodie as an opportunity for me to educate people on what I know and learn from other people about what they know. It's kind of a space to talk about Nigerian food, celebrate it, and educate the world about what it is and what it isn't.
Nice. Okay, so I this is, again, it's not that I mean to just be hyping you, that I do mean to hype you, but you know, from my own experience, my dad was always a picky eater, right? So the only thing that we ate growing up was rice, yam, and beans. He didn't like spices in his stew. He didn't like, initially my mom used to try and, you know, cook for all of us, but after a while, as a working, like, it was just whatever your father eats is what everybody's eating.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of things I learned cooking wise was actually from you guys, from you, Afro Lems, and a few other people, Tata Shea, there were a few other blogs there. How does it feel to know that you have influenced, and by the way, I can cook like really well now, so you should be proud. Like, how does it feel to know that you've influenced so many people's food journey, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I actually never think about it. Like, I think that I'm proud of where Nigerian food is. I'm proud about what people know, what people now know about Nigerian food. I am proud to sit at tables that, you know, weren't an option when I started, right? I'm proud that there are lots of, I mean, our food doesn't have to be recognized because we recognize it. Nigerians, we don't need anybody to hype us. We can hype ourselves. But mm-hmm. I think it's beautiful to actually see, like, you know, you get emails from like the New York Times or the New Yorker or whatever it is that, oh, they're writing about this, or Jamie Oliver talking about jollof, opinions and things. Like, I think it's beautiful to see that there's a lot of recognition and interest in our food. I was chatting with Auntie Flo at some point, and she's like, how would you describe yourself in terms of like your placement in Nigerian cuisine? And I think that I'm more of a traditionalist. Like, I don't consider myself new culture. Like, if I'm thinking about somebody that is like new culture, I think about like Kitchen Butterfly. Like, Ozos is something like, you know, her interest is in more like modern modifications of like African, but mm-hmm. I consider myself on the other side of the spectrum, that I'm trying to be like, my interest is in more traditional. Like, why do we ferment you? Why does cassava go through fermented? Like, that's kind of like my interest. So I think that I'm proud, but I don't really think about like my contribution to it per se. Like, I'm just happy to be part of like the circle of people who are doing it and making it happen.
No, you should act, because honestly, if you know where someone like me is coming from,
yeah.
At some point, I had a catering business, and that was all, everything that I learned. A few things I learned from my mom, because I would, you know, but ask her. But a lot of things I learned was from you guys. So you've actually done and influenced a lot of people. That's something that you should definitely be proud of.
I'll go put it on my resume.
So let's go back to the journey. So yeah. Nigeria Foodie starts in 2009, and it continued for a bit, but there was a time that it seemed like, you know, things were a bit slow, and life happened. But, you know, let us know what the journey was like, because there was like a comeback that was like bass boost.
For real?
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know. I don't think I ever went, like, I don't think there was a time. I think probably now I would say that I've kind of like slowed down a little bit more. But I think there was a time in my journey where I was a little bit frustrated. And my frustration was with, you create something and somebody lifts it, like, mm-hmm. in like 48 hours, right?
Your content, why should we talk about that?
Your content is going viral, but the virality is not associated with you. It's because somebody else took it, put it on their blog. Like, there were so many things like that was really, really draining, because content creation is extremely expensive.
Mm.
It is. Content creation is very expensive. You go grocery, you look for the perfect, like, sometimes you have to wake up at like dawn to start prepping so that you're shooting when it's premium light. Like, I think that there was probably a time where I felt like, you know, I don't want to create anything anymore, but then I still kept at it because I was doing it for myself. I was doing it because I loved it, not necessarily because I was doing it for anybody else. I think before I had kids, I had a lot of time. to create. So I will think about something. Now I'll go to the store, get what I need, and then start experimenting and stuff. But I think with kids and a full-time job and all of that, I found that, you know, pushing out 2 contents a month was a lot. Like, it was that's enough. I couldn't do like the twice a week things anymore. But I think that I've kind of stayed with it in as much as possible. But I don't know that I ever like.
No, because there was a tweet once that you I can't remember what year it was, but you're like, your husband, I'm not sure if you're comfortable with his name, you know, asking you what you wanted to do and writing it down, and said, okay, he was going to help you or something. I think after that, all of a sudden, Niger food was just everywhere. I don't know if you remember the exact tweet.
I do remember the tweet.
Yeah, so I think after that, you know, it was just like everything changed. Quality, picture quality, everything.
And I would say that I think women, when we get married, there's like societal expectation. I don't know if it's like internal or if it's like external, right? There's like societal expectation of, oh, now your wife, have children, go to work, take care of your children. Like, I think that there was probably a time where I felt like, should I still, like, am I supposed to be having time to be doing all of these things? But I'm lucky enough to be married to somebody who is very interested in what I am interested in. Like, you want to do this? You need my help? I will make it happen. So I think that that's definitely a privileged position that I see in my life that I really would never take for granted, because my husband took on food photography because of me, right? He took on videography because of me, so he could help me. So I think that there was definitely a time in my life where, you know, the pressure of like marriage and children got a little bit overwhelming, but then I had my husband who was like super happy to help me, and that was like really, really, very helpful in helping me kind of like maintain the journey and keep going.
Wow. You spoke about copyright, and it's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, because at some point you became like the copyright intellectual property. You are very big on it, and I understand why. A lot of people I find, even with my content creation on my platform as well, sometimes when and the way it would just get lifted, sometimes I don't kind of know what to do with that. And I know you're big on copyright. Why is it such a big deal? You explained it. And I remember there was also a situation with I don't know what to call him, but yeah, whatever. Anyways, I'm low-key happy with what's happening with him. All good. But anyways, and a lot of times people just say, leave it, just put next time make your font bigger and all of that. Why is it such a big deal? There's also somebody I know that actually created, not that I know her, but you know, and I think you addressed it. She had like a whole nutrition book on, and it was all your stuff, you know. So why are you so big? Why do you always like, why are you so big? Because at the end of the day, people say it's publicity. Yeah, get a publicity.
No, it is not. It is not publicity. I don't think so. See, if you've created, and I always, there are 2 classes of people on the internet. There are people who create and people who do not create. Mm-hmm. I think people who have never created are very quick to assume that somebody is just making a big deal out of something that is small. Mm-hmm. If you've ever had to go to the store at 10 p.m., to get what you need, to wake up at 5, to start creating, so that when Premium Lights eat at 8 o'clock, you can shoot, edit that video that day, and have it available for somebody to just carry it, boom, and not even acknowledge the work that went into it in any way. I think if you've been there, then you understand why it's important that we just don't allow these things to happen. And it's not just with before we started being noisy, I my content is very important to me because it is what I love to do. I put my sweat and passion into it. I've been in Eket and I've seen my food picture being used by a global seasoning cube brand for campaigns without paying me a cent. That is not okay. I do not think that it's not publicity. Nobody knew the strength that went into taking that picture. Nobody knew the time it took for me to create that content. So for somebody to be profiting off of it without any acknowledgement, without any, it's not okay, right? Mm-hmm. And I think for us as Nigerians, we're so quick to say, forgive, forget, and move on. And that's, I think that is a huge part of the problem that we have as a country.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived in Canada for 15 years. I know that I cannot copy somebody's resume and go present it to somebody else's mind because I understand that there are consequences to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a project at work, I cannot go online, copy and paste my project, and then present it as my own. Because I understand that there are consequences, right? When you live in a society that functions, you understand that there are consequences to everyday actions. And you know that somebody is going to hold you accountable, whether you like it or not. It's not just, I don't think it's just, in, it's just content stealing. Mm-hmm. Our politicians do it every day. We budget for something. You have a 40 billion naira budget for something. We can all see that this is a $40 billion budget for something. But they don't do it, and we don't hold them accountable because, well, he has done his own, his term is finished, somebody else is going to come. I think we have this attitude towards things, and it continues to affect us in a really, really, like, there are so many negative ramifications to how we choose to just on a lot of things, right? So for me, I think that you can't just take my stuff and expect me to keep quiet, to shut up and just take it. I would not do that because it is mine. It is my work. It is my passion. It's something that I created with my blood and sweat. And there's no reason why somebody should be profiting from that without acknowledging the work that went into it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the thing, Grace, because, I mean, there have been a couple of brands that I've tried to work, that I've worked with, and the staging, the taking of pictures, it's not easy. Sometimes a post can actually take 6-7 hours.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's, I get that. And, you know, I find that, I mean, you talked about the publicity thing, you know, so is there a balance that can sort of like be created? What's the right thing to do? If I see a recipe I like on your page and, oh my God, I just love this ogbono, I wanted to share with somebody, repost on my page, what is the right way to go about it?
I think, first of all, cut to demand that you ask the person first, if they're okay with that. I think that's the bare minimum that you can do, right? If you're going to copy somebody's content, the bare minimum is to ask them, is it okay if I share? Nigerian brands do it all the time. Before Bella Naija repost anything off of my page, they shoot me a quick email or a quick DM. Hey, we saw this content. Is it okay if we share? Of course, with credit to you. And I think that's just common sense, right? That's just, it's like, oh, we acknowledge the work that went into this. We would like to use it, but is it okay if we do that? So I think that that's like the basic thing. And the second thing for me is, don't hide the person's at where nobody is going to find it. If you can't find space for it in the first line of whatever it is you're reposting or the second line, then don't do it. Because intent matters. If you're reposting my content, you're definitely benefiting from it. You're not reposting it out of the goodness of your heart. Like, you're reposting it so you have content on your page. You're reposting it so you have engagement on your page. It's not that you're reposting it for my benefit. You're reposting it for your benefit. So the least that you can do is to make sure that it equally benefits both of us. And where it benefits both of us is where people can easily find where that content came from.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not 700 lines and then dot, 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 dot. And then put all of the hashtags of the world. And then put the, like, what's the point of that? Who is going to, we all know how internet, who has the attention span to actually go in, open and expand, go through all of your hashtags and then find the art of the person, right? I feel like that's disingenuous. So if you're going to share somebody's content, ask them first, and when they do agree, make sure that you're putting the information where it benefits both of you.
Thank you. So let's go back to the journey. And please, if you have any questions, you can just use the question
tab. I can't even see anything moving up. Maybe my screen is frozen.
You can. Oh, I think you turned off your comments.
Did I?
Yeah, probably.
I have no idea. Did I?
Because, yeah, everybody is like, yeah. So a lot of people agree with you. Or everybody's agreeing with you. So let's go back to the journey. So Naija Foodie picks off, you know, is doing well, and then you introduce I think you took a break, you took a bit of a break to take your take your certification as a clinical worker.
Did I take a break? Are you sure? I'm just kidding.
Like, I think you were a bit not as active as you are right now.
Okay
So maybe that's what I mean. So then you come out with Lynn, and I remember because I got the very first copy, and it was amazing. How did you think about creating recipes? Now, because there are some things that they tell you that if the palm oil is not floating, it cannot be sweet. You know, how were you able to? What was the inspiration? I'm sure the inspiration is pretty obvious, but let us know what inspired you to create that, and how did you take the steps? I mean, like, it's mind-blowing because to me, I'd never been done before, you know?
Yeah. So I think that, first of all, it came from experience. I don't know if you met me when I was a little or not, but I came to Canada as a teen. For those who don't know, I don't like that. I'm not saying maybe I should get off and then you invite me or something. I don't think I turned anything off, but I can't really see anything on my screen.
Yeah, okay, maybe you should try coming back in.
Let me 1 second, then I'll get on.
Hi guys, hope you're enjoying this. Wow, it's been amazing. I'm trying to pack everything in 1 hour, but you know, we'll see how it goes. Okay. Let me send you a request again. Can you see it now?
Yes, I can see it now. Awesome. Okay. So, I don't know when we met, but there was a time in my life. You guys, I'm ashamed. I used to spend like $120 every month buying this. I think it was called oolong tea or something. And this is my husband's automation. So the light has not gone off because I didn't move. Thank you, light. So I used to spend all this money buying slimming tea online. And then I wanted to lose weight, and I'll go to the gym. I used to go to Park at UFS. And then I'll go to Park, and they'll tell me that, oh, you need to eat salad. And I used to live on rest, and I'll just be eating the salad like this. I'm like, God, why is this even something that is happening to my life? So, and then, of course, he was like, oh, you want to lose weight on Nigerian food? Which Nigerian food are you going to lose? You're just going to be getting everything you're eating is carb, carb, carb. So I went through that experience of, like, wanting a solution and not being able to find one. And then I started writing about, you know, trying to lose weight, blah, blah, blah. And then I started experimenting with myself. So I would come up with, like, recipes, and then I would share. I will blackmail you. I will come up with recipes, and then I would share. And people were like, oh my God, thank you for sharing. You know, like, I found a lot of people that were kind of on the same journey as I was. And I tell people all the time, 90% of the content that made up the first Lean product is still on the Naija Foodie website. Anybody can access it for free. It was information. I remember I had written an article about 10 things to do to lose weight on a Nigerian diet or something. And I think it was my cousin that was like flying in Nigeria, and it was in one of the in-flight magazines. Like, I didn't even know, right? And then she sent me pictures like, oh my God, this is really random. I'm like, oh, like, I didn't even know that it had like that much reach. Like, there were so many people that were looking for that kind of information. So I think that it was just that it was there was like a good reception to the free articles I was writing and sharing my own experiences. And then I was like, okay, if this is something that I truly want to do to be able to help people, I need to be able to get an education on it. So when I did that, and with learning about like the science of weight loss, and then combining that with like my passion for recipe development, it kind of worked well for me. But it's still not something that I stab my finger and then it happens. It's like one Ayamashi recipe that people always rave about online, and I swear, dammy, the first time I experimented with that recipe was in 2013, and I didn't have anything to share until last year.
Wow.
So it was like, sometimes some things take time because you have to understand that there still has to be flavor, right? You still have to like understand how to like layer flavors, how to like find like the right balance of like protein and fat. Like there's like so much complexity to actually developing something that it still tastes, it doesn't taste like, oh, you're suffering, and then it still becomes flavorful. And yeah, so it's from learning and then living it as well, because it's something that we live in my house. We live lean as much as possible, and there's still a lot of like traditional recipes that like, we'll still make like the buka stews, but then on a week that we have buka stew, right, we're not going to have buka stew and then have ayamashi, and then like it's all in the balance of like trying to find, you know, living on a Nigerian diet but still trying to find the balance as much as possible. But it takes time. Honestly, it takes that. I am actually one. I remember people that are on Lean Facebook group, they'll be able to see from the origin story, like of that. Like, people were asking, can you have an ayamashi recipe for Lean? And I'm like, ayamashi is the oil, right? And the process of it. So yeah, it's time, it's passion, and it's just perfecting what is imperfect.
And I mean, you have demystified a lot of things about African food. Because I remember, you know, talking to some of my aunties, and when I would tell them, oh, you know, we eba, you can use curly flour, and and when they eventually tried it, they were sold on it. I have an aunt that's all she eats, like the one-fourth gari, and you know, and that's all she eats. So I mean, do you intend to do that with all Nigerian recipes?
My goal is to strike a balance between nutrition, tradition, and flavor. That's it. That's my goal, right? Because not everything needs to change, or not everything necessarily needs to be adjusted. I think there's just an overarching principle of the way our forefathers cooked. I grew up with my grandmother. She didn't have a fridge. So she cooked, oil was a form of preservation for food. Mm. So they cooked with a lot of oil because it was a way for them to preserve whatever they were cooking for 2-3 days. Mm-hmm. You have fridge, you live in Canada, you don't need oil to preserve your food. You can put it inside the fridge, right? You can put it, but then oil adds flavor as well. So what's the right balance, right, of, you know, flavor and you know, a traditional process for something, right? Not like, if we look at not our grandparents, I think there's so much education in like traditional processing of food in Nigeria. There's so much education. Like if you look at like the average or the traditional diet of like a villager, not a Lagosian, if you look at the traditional diet of like a villager in Nigeria, they almost always start their day with like fermented food. So you have the pap, you have the omiogi, you have all of these things that have gone through process of fermentation. And when you ferment something like carbohydrates, it doesn't impact your blood sugar the same way like just straight up carb does. Mm. So there are so many things, there's so many traditional processes that actually enhances the way we live and the way we and the way our diet is, that we really have lost in like our transition to city life, that we need to bring back. So my goal is to just make Nigerian food better from farm to table.
Nice. And you've always talked about wanting to be a farmer, and you do a bit of farming here. But I don't know if you invest in, you know, farming in Nigeria or agriculture in Nigeria, but are there plans to go into the agricultural industry?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So here and in Nigeria?
Yes. I think, yeah, farming is something that I've always loved. It's something that I think we're leaving so much on the table when it comes to our food. And again, there was a time that there was like a big issue in Nigeria where there's this company in India that was packaging curry and bringing it back into Nigeria and mm-hmm. selling it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with international companies making our food, but I think in processing, we lose the traditional, we lose a lot of things, including mm-hmm. the why things are done. And if you don't eat the food, you don't consume the food, I think your interest is very, very different from somebody who consumes it. A good example is curry, right? Processing, you can carry cassava, you know, grate it or whatever it is and fry it and it's ready. But cassava has a high amount of cyanide. Mm. It's literally poisonous, right? That's why it is fermented. And, you know, it's in being part of the consumption that you actually
are conscious.
And you're conscious about, like, and you're conscious about, oh, you know, why you have to ferment it, how long you have to ferment it for. And it's not just, I think that if somebody is just doing it for the profit of it, it's very, very easy to lose a lot of, like, the value addition in the processing. Mm-hmm. So anyways, that was a very short question that you asked me. Am I going to go into, yes, 100%. Today, tomorrow, I am ready, but, you know, life in stages.
Yes, yes, yes. And my last question before I take questions from everyone watching us. Your brand, I don't know if it was intentional because of the nature of what you do, but seemed very focused to the Nigerian audience.
Yeah.
Right? Or Nigerians, whether in Nigeria or in diaspora. Are there plans to sort of include other people? I know, for example, when I was at the credit union, every time I make a recipe and they're like, oh my god, this was so good, I just the look of your blog, everything. I mean, I'm all about promoting Africans, so once I see that, that was always it. So I know a couple of my colleagues that till today still check out some recipes on your blog. But is there any other plan, you know, even with Canadian food, to sort of to expand to yes. that reach?
Yes. We have a project launching, and I'm not going to talk about it just because we haven't talked about it yet. But the goal is to educate the world on African food. Like, if you're really, really interested in the why, not just the how, right? Like, if you want to know how, you just Google how to make jollof rice and you go on Niger Free. But if your interest is beyond just the recipe, it's in the why do I have to fry the tomato paste before I put it in jollof, or mm-hmm. why can't I use olive oil instead of whatever, like mm-hmm. I think that there is an opportunity for us to educate in detail those who are really interested in understanding the why of our food. So definitely there is, my goal is to provide that opportunity for people to learn in mm-hmm. depth and in detail about, you know, why we do certain things that we do in terms of like cooking and drinking food. And there are a lot of non-Nigerians that do approach and do use Niger foodie recipes, but my intent is never to make it pretty for you or to make it to bend
standards.
I don't know what the right word is, mm-hmm. but if my Nigerian audience can consume it, you can also consume it. It is mm-hmm. if I want to cook I don't even know Canadian, what is it, minestrone or whatever that's
poutine.
If I want to cook it, I will go to a Canadian blog, and whatever it is, if I don't have it, I will find it. So mm-hmm. I think that information can be consumed however, in, you know, it doesn't have to be modified for a certain audience. I guess mm-hmm. that's kind of like my mm-hmm. point.
And you know, that's one of the things that I actually really, really admire about your brand, because it has been consistent, you know, the Nigeria Foodie brand, and it has been successful. And it's viewed different parts of the world, all over. I don't know what your insights or your demographics are, but I imagine it's viewed in different parts of the world. So it's possible that you can stick to the authentic Nigerian and it would work.
Yeah.
You know, you're an example of that. Thank you so much, Ronke. So we'll just take some questions. Someone says, why are you so fine? Teach me your ways, coach. From Linda.
Linda, why? I'm shy. It's the braces.
Someone says, please share some wisdom for those of us who are trying to grow passion projects into a viable income stream in the future.
So, I don't know. I think that the biggest thing is you have to understand your why. Like, you have, if you're passionate about something, you have to understand why you're doing it before you even think about how to make money from it, right? Like, you have to understand why you're doing it, because it's not always going to be pretty. Make sure that you know your onions, because people will come for you no matter what, right? So you have to have that conviction in whatever it is that you're doing, so that when people come and try to whatever, you're not discouraged, because you understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. And mm-hmm. then just stay consistent, right? I think for a lot of us who create, the fear is always, what if I put it out there and nobody comes? Mm-hmm. But your role is not how people receive the information you're putting out. Your role mm-hmm. is to put the information out. That is what you can control.
Mm-hmm.
What is within your control is in doing the work and putting out the information. How people receive that is really up to them, and you can't control that. So you should never let that kind of like deter you from doing what you want to do.
And I'll just add to her question. So as a content creator myself, people don't understand how much, maybe it's because they don't understand how much work goes into actually creating something that did not exist before. So actually thinking about the concept, trying to, and all that stuff. And then when it's not received a way that you're expecting it to be received, how do you cope with that? And how do you cope with your critics as well?
It is not your business. Honestly speaking, it is not your business. What? Because you cannot control what other people think. You cannot mm-hmm. control. There are things, honestly, there are times where I would literally spend a week. So Sunday, well, I talk about something, and then during the week, I go into the store, and then I photograph it in the perfect light and I put it out, and the engagement rate is like 10%. And then I'm just there chopping plantain, and I take a picture of the plantain and I post it, and then you have like hundreds of comments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to understand that you cannot, your job as a creator is to create and put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
How people receive that information, it's not within your control. And mm-hmm. that should never stop you, because you're not creating because you want people to praise you. You're creating mm-hmm. because you love it, right? You're creating because it is something that you thought about, it's cool in your head, you did it, and now you've put it out in the world. So if it's well received, yay you. If it's not well received, you still have to keep going, because if all the time your goal is, I want to create this thing and have everybody praise me, you stop creating after like two contents.
Mm-hmm.
Because not everything we bang, right? It might be the third or the fourth or the fifth or the sixth, but that is not within your control. As a creative, your job is to create and put it out there. That's what you can manage. How people receive it, it's truly in their control. So post it, go and sleep. If you have two engagements, if it is one, and if it's 100, just, you know, don't try to control what you cannot.
Keep it pushing.
Yeah.
So, next question. Where do you find your inspiration to continue? How do you deal with burnouts? Very good question.
Burnout. I take breaks. My husband tells me that I work too much, to be honest. And he tries to encourage me to take breaks because I'm the kind of person that I can work and work and work and work and work. Like, I'll still be on my phone at like 12 midnight. And then it's like, no, it's time to take a break. So you have to create conscious time to take a break. Now I try not to work on Sundays, or when I do like half post on Sunday, it's because I want to gist with people or whatever it is. It's not really like an obligation or I have to do this work thing. I don't schedule anything for Sunday. I don't do consult on Sundays. So try to take your off day so you can like kind of recharge. And then inspiration, don't overthink it. I think for us, it's very, very easy for us to think that everything we
Sorry, we lost you there. Hello?
Am I still on?
Yes, so yes.
That was, we were on the right topic. That was my screen time for the day timing out. So again, set screen time for yourself, because if you're on the internet, then you can be there all day. But I think that you doesn't have to be, what you're putting out doesn't have to be complex, right? It just has to be something that you have something, if you have anything to say about it, put it out there. You don't have to always bring out a professional camera. It could be an iPhone 4 too. Find inspiration in how you're living every day, and then it becomes, you know, less of a chore.
Thank you for that. Next question. How did you birth the idea of Lean and distinguish yourself from other weight loss plans?
I think we've kind of spoke to that.
Yeah.
But I think that for me, I live Lean. It is my life I create. And I think that that's definitely something that set me apart, is that, you know, my husband says it all the time, like, oh, I'm so proud of you and Lean. Like, I go on your page and you actually see the food that people are eating, right? It's not just like inspiration from the internet. It's the actual food that you've cooked. It's actual food that people on your program are like taking pictures of and shared with you. And I think that that's kind of what sets Lean apart, in that we are creators. We understand Nigerian food because we eat it and live it every day. And yeah, so it's not just something that is we are doing because it's something that we actually leave.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
What is the process of creating a Lean plan like? I think she touched that already. So, yeah. So, I think that's all the questions that we have here. I don't know if I missed any question in the comments, but what can we look forward to with Lean in 2021? I know you said you're doing this full time now. How does that feel?
It feels wonderful. I mean, I've worked since I got out of university. I've worked since the day I left school. Actually, no, that's not true. I didn't work this that summer. But I've worked for a very, very long time. And I got to this place, is a spot in my career where I was managing people. And I think for a lot of people who have had management roles, you know that a lot of your work is people management, right? It's not the work. And I like the work because the work is controllable. I can control my hours. I can control my time. If somebody's cats had a bad night, I cannot control that. If somebody is thinking it's lunchtime, but they were not nice to their dog when they were leaving home, so now they have to go home to go and say sorry to their dog. It becomes exhausting, right? Especially when it's not, you know, you can be spending your time doing something that you actually truly love. Like, I mean, I would not like, accounting money is good money, but I think I've just gotten to a point where I felt like I was comfortable doing this full time. And with a lot of the project that I'm looking to launch, it was just better to spend more time on those than going into meetings that could have been emails.
So what can we look forward to now that Rukena has, like, there's time? What can we look forward to?
Definitely we're looking into launching some actual lean products, so physical product for the Losing Engine brand. Definitely taking my Najafi creative. There are a lot of things that I've kind of like created on Najafi that were like, can I just buy it? I don't want to cook it myself. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to have products on the Najafi side as well. And then really truly work on that farm to table dream and kind of like actualize some things on that chain as well. So it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. I think that it's been a long time coming, building on dreams, and yeah, it's about time to make things happen, I guess.
Okay, I have one last question before we call it a night. How have you been able to create a community? Because one of the amazing things about Niger Foodie is that it's beyond a, like, you've created a community, you know. There are a bunch of people that you just say, like, hey, we're on lean, and all of a sudden, like, you know, how are you able to do that? It's one of the things that right from the onset, because even with the first lean, I'm still a part of that group on Facebook. You were able to just build that. It seemed like Ronke was our sister. Ronke was there cheering us on. You can't possibly do that. Like, how are you able to manage all of this, considering the fact that you have, I think, almost 350 followers on Instagram, for example. Don't talk about the followers you have on Twitter. You're pretty active there. Don't talk about the people that you have on. Like, how do you make us always feel like you are by our side, just cheering us on?
Honestly, I'm very thankful for the kind of audience that follow me, because I feel like there are so many people, like, I actually genuinely have the best, I'm not even lying, I have like the best audience, because I feel there are so many people that I've met on this food blogging journey, honestly, to be like, there's so many people that I've met that every day they're like, oh, okay, I just saw this, I thought about you, you should do something like this for. Like, there's so many people who are really honestly, just sincerely interested in seeing, like, the brand grow, and you're ready to, like, put their time and effort into making it happen. So I think I'm just blessed, honestly, in that way, to have people in my corner who are kind of like, almost always ready to, like, oh, jump on the next thing, because, oh, Ronke is doing A or B or C, we should support. So I think that it's not by my power, I just really truly do have the best people who are happy to support me.
Shout out to the Niger foodies. Oh, hey, we're here. If you enjoy this interview, please, so that when I ask Ronke to come again, she will come. Please, just a round of applause in the comments. A round of applause. So you can just put the clapping hand in the comment section. Thank you so much, Ronke. No, thank you that you agreed to do this. Like, for some reason, I was nervous. I don't know why. When I tell people that I'm nervous every time I interview people, they never believe me. But yeah. And even if I've known you for a while, you know, I was nervous. And thank you that you did this. Thank you for just being an inspiration. As I said, I'm sure you don't remember the first encounter that we had. But that still sticks with me, because just seeing, like, it's kind of like seeing you speaking it and now the manifestation of that coming into existence and all of that. So I have a different level of appreciation for what you do, because now when I look at all these food bloggers, and there's so many now, you know, to see that you were one of the people that pioneered this whole thing is just amazing. So thank you the amazing things that you're doing.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I'm glad we were able to have this conversation. I know that sometimes I'm back. I don't do a lot of, like, the online things, because, yeah, I know it's odd, because people think, oh, you're a blogger, you've been doing it for a long time, comfortable putting yourself about that. I think it's something that I'm actually growing into. A lot of people don't know, but I blogged anonymously for years. Like, I never had like my picture or anything out publicly. So it's something that I've had to like inch into. So I appreciate everybody's like patience with me. And yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you. And so just to let everyone know, my name is Damiadini. I am a media mogul. I used to call myself a town crier, but they said I should change it. I'm a media mogul. My vision is to positively engage Africans in Canada. So what that means is that I saw that the way our stories were constantly being told were poverty stricken, fly on the face, African food is not, you know, is not nice, it's ill, you know, and I thought that we needed representation in media somehow. And that's what came about the vision of my platform. That's a summary of everything. And it's a pleasure to always feature people like Ronke. So please feel free to follow me.
Follow Dami, guys. She's awesome.
Yay. And please, if you're not following Ronke as well, for those of you, because this is going on my podcast as well. So if you want to listen to it, it's going to be on my podcast. It's going to be on YouTube. So make sure you follow Ronke. I will put all her information in the description box and the show notes so that you can get in touch with her. As I always say, the only way that we can be empowered is when we're economically empowered. So let us support one another. That's the essence of all of this. By the time we know that Niger foodie recipes are here and there, you know, it's a global brand. You know, this person is doing this with whatever they're doing, and it's a good look on our community. So please make sure that you support. Thank you once again. Ronke, any last words for the people before you go?
Thanks for watching. Thanks for having me at this late hour of the evening. I know it's kind of like a busy time for a lot of us, but I know that you have access to a lot of new Nigerians in Canada. So again, I'm always happy. I don't always have time, but shoot me a message if you have questions and I will get to it, I promise. It might not be like sharply, but I'm always here if you have any questions about food, getting things and all of that. So yeah, thank you for having me, Dami.
Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful evening.